Evening, folks, and welcome back to the Trinity Tims podcast. We're around for our usual weekly broadcast this week, and obviously we are broadcasting officially as champions this week. 55 is in the bag. As usual, I'm joined by Joe McHugh of Video Cels and my colleague James Forrest of the Celtic blog. We have a jam-packed show. We're going to try and pack it all into an hour. But look, it's a good day to be a Celt, especially after the weekend's results. And now it's 3-5 goal wins in a row. Kilmarnock we beat by 5. St. Johnstone we beat by 5. And we just beat Dundee United by 5. So it's been a pretty good run of games. Let's hope we can knock another 5 in next weekend. That would be absolutely fantastic. And a great way to round it all off. So I suppose the first thing we're going to touch on is the game at Tannadice on Saturday, which began a bit tentatively, I guess. The Dundee United players were all out to try and spoil the party for the first 10-15 minutes or so. We didn't seem to be able to get out of our halves. And then obviously the fans disrupted play with their little protest about Dundee United taking their hard-earned money, which, to be fair, I don't know what you guys think, but it was an effective protest considering what the Dundee United board did to jack up the prices for the Celtic fans, which was really unfair, you know, considering I think it was just taking total advantage of the Celtic fans. But the game itself, look, what can you say? It was 5-0. It was a good, solid all-round win. Some great moves. That pivot by Arnie Ingles was fantastic, to where he knocked the ball out to Dyson Maeda to get the second goal, which Nicholas Kuhn bagged. Kuhn seems to be back on form somewhat. We'll have to ask the lads who he was telling to shut up when he scored anyway, whether it was the Celtic fans, the media, or the Dundee United fans, I don't know. But in terms of the overall results and the overall performance, it was excellent. Adam Ida, we touched on that subject last week, Adam Ida did exactly what we expected he'd do, you know, where he's had these little barren patches. He's come back, he scored a goal, and then he's bagged a few, and he's just done 3 goals in 2 games, which shows that all that's, I suppose, missing from his game and what he can really work on next season is consistency. If he can get that consistency in those gaps, he could be, as James said in his article there on him, after the weekend, that he could easily be a 30-goal player next season. So we will move on to the guys and get their opinions on the game. I'll start with you, James. What did you think of the performance on Saturday at Tannadice?
Oh, dominant. Absolutely dominant. Exactly what we needed to deliver. As you say, that's 3 5-0 wins in a row since Rodgers took them all in the dressing room and gave them a rap on the knuckles. You can tell already that it wasn't a Bazza-style rant that he gave them. He's basically said to them, look, you guys have got standards. We're not maintaining these standards right now. Let's go. What's the problem? And you can tell that we're back to where we were at the start of the season when we were regularly knocking in 4 or 5 goals a game. It's when you look at the players in particular who stepped it up. We talked about Nicholas Kuhn, and I didn't know if Nicholas Kuhn would even start the game. But he was exceptional. He was back to his best. Big Ida has came on and been brilliant again. And that's a difficult thing to ask somebody who's played well in the last game and then got dropped to the bench. And you're asking him to come on as a sub this time and find the same level, and he's done it and then some. So, yeah, I mean, whatever Rodgers and the players have hashed out, it has worked. Everybody's back playing at the same kind of pace and aggression and closing down and everything else that they were doing at the start of the season. It was just so easy. And that's against a team that's playing for a place in Europe. So there was no question that they came and laid down to us, or, you know, weren't they intending to try and spoil the party in some way? They had things at stake, and we still made it look very easy.
But I think it seems to be the pattern over the last few games has been that once we scored that first goal, the floodgates seem to open, and teams just can't seem to cope with us once we get that first goal. And I suppose one thing that stood out to me about the game on Saturday was, although Dyson Maeda himself didn't score, his contribution again was second to none. I mean, yeah. those two crosses from the wing to get the two opening, you know, well, the two goals from play, we'll say, aside from the one from the corner, were fantastic balls. And it just goes to show what an all-round contributor he is. to the team. You know, even if he doesn't score goals, he's still chipping in there with assists, which is fantastic. His consistency levels are just off the scale. And he really showed that again on Saturday, despite not scoring a goal, and I hoped that he would. But then at the same time, I hoped that Adam Ida would. So, you know, you win some, you lose some. You can't always get them all scoring at the same time. And I was happy to see Nicholas Gunn come back and, you know, score a couple of goals and get back on form. He's up to 20 now as well. So he's had an absolutely fantastic season. But yeah, you're right. I mean, there was stuff at stake there for Dundee United. They have a European position to play for. They have done well when you consider that they've come up from the Championship and this is their first season back after the Championship. And Jim Goodwin has done a good job with him. He's recovered well from the poor Aberdeen.
Absolutely, he has.
He's done a good job there. And I think with a bit of funding in the summer and a couple of good acquisitions, he could be knocking around the top four easy if he wanted to do that. So we go to Joe. Joe, your opinion there on the game on Saturday. How did you feel it went for Celtic, I suppose? There isn't much you can say negative about it anyway, that's for sure.
It's very impressive how they've managed to raise the bar again. They'd switched off big time February going into March, and from experience, it's difficult to get it back again when the prizes are all but won. And we saw it 2 years ago under Ange. Once the league was won, the league's been won for quite a while, but under Ange, you know, it was up against Mickey Beale. I think it was 3-2 they won at Celtic Park. That was shortly after. That was just before the Scottish Cup semi-final. But after that, it dropped horrendously. But to get the team back playing it, I mean, I'm not kidding on. The opponents we're playing against are very, very, very poor. The United are better than St Johnstone and Kilmarnock, but they're not a very good team. But it's the mentality. Rogers questioned the mentality after St Johnstone, yeah. But they found the right mentality, the winning mentality, to come back. And it would be difficult to pick any flaw in the team on Saturday. Everyone performed well. And the second goal was just outstanding. That's exactly the form and the way we want to play on Sunday at Ibrox. A quick ball from the goalkeeper. Ingles takes it, a quick turn, pings it out left, Maeda in tons of space. And as soon as the ball went to Maeda, Kuhn and also Alistair Johnson ended up running to the front post, but the ball went behind and it was Kuhn that put it away. So that's exactly what we want to see on Sunday. Very impressive that they've got their game back together again. Five good goals, it could have been six or seven. United, if after 14, 15 minutes of playing quite well, a few tangerines come onto the park. Those tangerines wouldn't have been on the park if they'd only charged Celtic £34-35. But if that causes your team to go into a tailspin, that's pretty worrying. But thankfully, it'll be interesting. There's very little time between the first and second goals in recent weeks. Once the first one goes in, the second's soon after. And if we're setting a pattern of being 3 or 4 nothing up at half-time, I hope it continues. So a great performance. The goalkeeper's looking well. The goalkeeper's looking comfortable. Carter Vickers was very wobbly a month ago. Carter Vickers is back solid. Scales stepped in and he's sort of invisible, but that's good because you're not seeing mistakes. When there's been others playing there, it's been a bit awkward. But Scales and Carter Vickers seem to have established a good relationship. And I think central defence is all about partnerships. You could have two wonderful defenders, but if they can't play together, it's not much use. But Scales and Carter Vickers seem to be the business. The established three in midfield are working well. We've got good options in attack. It's very disappointing news on Jota.
Yeah.
That's a big loss. Five players are really effective forwards. We're now down to four, and that could be significant. Not majorly, but I'm sure we'd all prefer having Jota somewhere going to Ibrox on Sunday. But the team's got tons of confidence, and you could win in the league back at Celtic Park. A few of them are in getting awards today. They're in nominations for PFA Player of the Year. and then tomorrow they can get their working heads back on and start preparing at Lennoxtown, and hopefully they can carry this on into Sunday. So, yep, absolutely. A flawless performance. They could have scored more, but I'll take five on Sunday as well. Thank you very much.
Yeah, absolutely. We'd definitely take that if it came our way. Any of you guys read into Nicholas Coons, sort of what he did after his first goal and who it was he was aiming it at? Do you think it was the Celtic fans, or do you think it was the United fans? Or the media?
Very trivial.
No. And I don't know or care. It's one of those things. Players do this stuff all the time, and none of us are body language experts, and we've slagged people who've tried to be. No, as long as he is scoring goals for us, he can act however he wants after he scores them.
I'm perfectly happy
with it.
Yeah, I think overall it seems that the business end of the season, we always seem to just step it up. We did that last season, and I suppose when you look at last season, it was that bit tougher because we were in a bit of a tight fight with the Ibrox side, whereas this season that wasn't really the case. And I suppose that's where the complacency kind of snuck in there. But I think based on what you said, James, it's quite clear that Brendan Rodgers had the complacency conversation with the guys. And he told them that regardless of what the position is, where we are in the table, how far ahead we are, complacency just doesn't come into it. Yeah. And obviously from the game after that game at, you know, the Kilmarnock game after the game at St. Johnstone, we got the reaction we expected. And it's been just top-notch since. That tops off by what we saw on Saturday. So, yeah, definitely an all-round five-star performance. Yeah, that's the easiest
way to say it. That's exactly why the boss said that this stuff isn't easy, because the second you get so far in front that the players start switching off, it's his job to make sure that they switch back on again rapidly. And Rodgers tolerated quite a bit, I think, before the St. Johnstone game. He tolerated a few players being asleep at the wheel, but that day was just so dreadful. I think his patience snapped and he says, well, nah, no more of this. No more of this. I mean, it's obvious that it's worked. Whatever he said to him has done the job. It's got through. He's not listening to them. These guys only listening to the manager.
Yeah, well, we just have to hope that
everybody
that
in the dressing room listens to him.
Yeah, we just have to hope that momentum no carries until next weekend. Yeah, if anything, you would expect that it will be up another notch, and that's what he'd want, you know. So, we move on to our next subject, which is, by contrast, the game at in Paisley on Saturday evening after our game. And the whining and moaning of Barry Ferguson after the game, which was, look, without putting too fine a point on it, it's a very, very childish behaviour from him. And has really shown him up to be the amateur that he is. Pissing and moaning about the fact that the players won't listen to him. They won't listen to you because they don't respect you. It's that simple. You know, so what did you make of that, James? I mean, that whole tantrum that he made or that he threw after the game.
It was the temper tantrum of a child no getting his way. I wasn't a professional manager reacting to a bad performance. That was, why isn't this working? Why aren't they listening? Why aren't they paying attention? How can we have ended up here? You know, everything that this guy's tried to do, everything that this management team has tried to do has been all about voodoo and hocus pocus. It's all been about invoking the name Rangers and the pride that players should have in wearing the jersey. Let's get it straight, Baza. Your team has won one title in 14 years. 14 years. So try to pretend that there's some fucking standard that the Ibrox, that these guys should be meeting, is bollocks, I'm afraid. As far as I'm concerned, they're meeting the standard that's expected of them. Simply the second best. What else can you say? There isn't any argument to it. The league table doesn't lie. It exaggerates sometimes, but it never lies. And 13 times in the last 14 years, we've won the title. So what other standards is he expecting? What is this great Ibrox standard of we don't settle for second best is he talking about? Literally does not exist. It literally exists only in his imagination. genuinely don't. And he believed that would work. He believed that all that dressing room needed was to watch the Brian Laudrup DVD a couple of times and smell the stale quays in the Jimmy Bell kit room, and everything would be fine. Yeah. Sorry, no, it was never going to work out like that. And the fact that they appointed a manager and a coaching team that thought such a simplistic solution was going to be enough is why this has ended in the total disaster that it has. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, their supporters should have asked a lot more questions about that, should have been a lot more pissed off about it. Because it's not just that they gave up a lot of points in the league. It's not just that they have suffered embarrassment and humiliation by having this guy on the touchline. They basically, I mean, I don't think the chances of winning the Europa League existed in the first place in any real meaningful sense, but they effectively surrendered any chance that they had when they appointed him. I mean, he's lucky to get through the Fenerbahce game. There was no way he was getting by Bilbao. He's not got any of the experience that's necessary to manage at that level. Keith Jackson the other week said, that Ferguson's a symbol of the kind of standards that have to return to the club. No, he isn't. Ferguson's a symbol of where they are. The fact that that was ever seen as any kind of credible appointment in the first place shows you just how calamitous things are at Ibrox. That somebody actually thought that was an answer. It was never an answer. It was like, as I said in a piece the other day, it's like if a Celtic fan thread did a most hilarious possible Ibrox scenarios, Fred. That would have been high on the list at the start of this season. The season ends with Barry Ferguson in the dugout. People would have pissed themselves laughing at that. Nobody would have expected it to happen. And here we are.
Yeah.
Mad. Absolutely mad.
Yeah, that's very true. But I think, I suppose we have to make the contrast. Unfortunately for Barry, he's stuck in pre-2012. And his mindset is linked to the old club.
Yeah.
He just doesn't understand clearly that the new club is not the old club. And whether he wants to admit it or not, inadvertently, he has admitted that this is a different team. This is a different club because they don't go by the standards of the old club. What's your take on it, Joe?
Well, it's great that the pretensions that they are the same club, the same standards, all these great successes, that's weighing down the current lot. So it's nice. It's a strange form of revenge that all this nonsense is coming back to bite them. If they started off as a fresh club and acknowledged all that, they'd be doing quite well. They've stabilised themselves in second place. They're a notch above Hibs, Aberdeen, Dundee United. So well done, but because of all this nonsense that they've got to hang on to about the one club, most successful club in the world up until 15th of December, all that is just weighing them down. And if you think that Robin Proper, Jeff Day, Mohamed Diomande, etc., have got one iota of knowledge of Billy Dodds, Neil McCann, Alan McGregor, Barry Ferguson, you're tuned to the moon. They've got no, these guys are unknown outside the Daily Record circulation area. Nobody in Holland, nobody in Africa, nobody in Asia gives a damn for any of these guys. And it'll be like a comedy scene seeing them coming into the dressing room. It worked for a couple of games early on. It was uber staunch to come back against Kilmarnock. It was back to reality as Motherwell won. Then you get two freaky results, and we were the victims of one of them. But I don't know if there's any club in the SPFL Premiership that's lost two goals in eight successive matches. I mean, even the teams that are down struggling at the bottom, they're not losing goals like that. So there's absolutely nothing there. And Ferguson's, every Friday, what a great week we've had at training. The boys are all looking good. Everybody's looking sharp. Looking forward to the game. Going to win their five post-split fixtures, 15 points hard, and then I'll get the job, by the way, lads. And then, unfortunately, the football starts again. And it was the most horrific game imaginable on Saturday. It was an affront to sport. It was summed up brilliantly. Early in the first half, or midway through the first half, nothing each. Liam Kelly presented the ball to the St Mirren centre forward, 15 yards from goal, open goal, and he couldn't even hit the target. So yeah. Kelly made a mess of it, but that was surpassed by St forward. It's brutal, brutal football. So it's nice that we're on top of all these teams, but our only benchmark is in Europe. The match was horrendous. When Cyril Dessers had missed a few, then he scored a goal. They come to the St Mirren fans like that. Are you watching me? Look at me. I'm nice one, Cyril. It's comedy gold. It's brutal to watch that. And then all their podcasters, they're all analysing it and just saying, if we can do this or that and change something, and if the left back goes forward a bit, and if the number six plays more as a number six, and if the right winger cuts it, they're rotten footballers. They'll find out in the summer. There's no clear out coming.
Last
season, they get, who's it, Lundstrom, Kemmer Roof, Ryan Jack, I'm trying to think who else got freed.
Cantwell.
None of them turned up. Look, Lundstrom's doing not too badly in Turkey. The rest of them, I think Roof might have retired. Ryan Jack's possibly retired. And the same scenario's coming this summer. They got £810,000 in for six players sold after the 30th of June. And all this clear out and other stuff, it's hilarious, because the one and only thing that motivates most footballers is money. And no other thing is going to offer these guys the same wages that they're getting at Ibrox. And they're certainly not going to be offered transfer fees. Rabbi Matondo is on his way back. He's bombed spectacularly in the German second division. So any club that might have had a notion for Rabbi Matondo will be saying, we'll just leave that one. And he's back to 30 grand or whatever it is he's getting for a week, the final year of his Ibrox contract. So the notion that the season ends and a new chapter opens, the 49ers come in, it's not. Most of the guys that were playing against St Mirren on Saturday will be around for the start of next season. And
yes,
fingers crossed the management team is as well. So it's a nice sideshow. We're motoring again. We're not limping. And they're most certain. They'd like to be limping. They're dragging themselves backwards under Barry Ferguson. So hopefully Keith gets his wish.
Yeah.
And Barry gets a long-term contract.
This is what made me laugh when Ferguson said at the weekend, these players are playing for their futures. Everyone at the club's playing for their future right now. And I thought, who's going to give a shit about that? The guys who are already leaving on freedom of contract know their future is not Ibrox, so they don't care. The guys who are at Ibrox on long-term contracts know Ferguson won't be there, so they don't care. I mean, I was writing about Spurs recently, and I said that one of the mistakes that Ange has made in going to Spurs is that nobody goes to Spurs anywhere to win trophies. The kind of players who go to Spurs are the guys who want to win things. They're the guys who just want the big paycheck and to live in London and to deal with the jet set stuff. And how are you going to turn that into a winning team? You'll never turn that into a winning team in 100 years. Unless that club's entire philosophy towards winning and losing changes, they're going nowhere. And that's the kind of mentality I think you've got at Ibrox now, where it's seen as a nice place to go to get a nice big paycheck, but nobody expects anything. The players go there. I mean, you said it perfectly, mate, right? These guys don't know, and they don't care who Billy Dodds was, and they don't care who Alan McGregor was, and they don't care who Barry Ferguson was as a player. If these guys had managerial pedigrees, they might respect that. But in terms of these guys saying, this is how it used to be here, they're like, well, one title in the last 14 years, that's not how it is anymore. And so it's not a club that winners go to. It's not a club players go to because they want to win trophies anymore. And that mentality is going to drag the whole club down. That's why when Ferguson talks about, oh, you know, we're playing for our futures, people are like, my future's secure, pal. I've got a 3-year deal here. I don't need to worry about my future. My mortgage is paid for the next couple of years. So it's mere hocus pocus as far as I'm concerned. And you've got guys like Tom English in the media who's expecting that they're going to sell like 8 or 9 players and replace them with the proper quality or whatever. Who is buying these guys? Who is interested in buying them? They've got loser branded all over them. Nobody's going to come in and take. Because again, if winners don't go and sign for that club, then if you want to sign winners, you don't go looking at Ibrox for your players. You're looking for, if you're looking for some mid-table struggler and you're looking to try and qualify for Europe or whatever, then you would go and sign players for Ibrox. But you wouldn't pay a premium for them because they're no premium players because they're no winners. They're caught in a vicious circle and there's no way they're going to get rid of it. They don't know how they're going to get rid of it. In order to buy anybody, in order to spend any kind of meaningful money, they are going to have to sell half that team and no one's going to buy that half of the team. You're right. That's the team that's going to start next season. Most of those players will still be there and most of them will be first team players.
One of the things are the sort of team that's been doing the rounds lately and you know, with all of the Ibrox fans, and we ourselves went viral with them last week in that we had almost 200,000 hits on over on X when they put up a clip of our podcast. First thing they said is that we're hurting, that the hurt is obvious in all of us because of the takeover that's upcoming. And I mean, I really had to laugh hard at that. We're hurting. I mean, what in God's name could we possibly be hurting about? We're just about to possibly land a treble and we're hurting because there's a takeover happening. So yeah, I mean, thanks for the publicity, guys. Over 200,000 views and shared widely. Absolutely fantastic. We're more than grateful for it. But get one thing straight. We are not in the slightest hurting. We are not in the slightest afraid of what's coming down the tracks at Ibrox. It does not in any way, shape, or form frighten us. Okay? So we need to get that much straight. And outside of that, it really amused me that they thought that this kind of affects us in that way. That we basically, we think that this is going to be our destruction, if you want to put it that way. And it's like, when I said the other day there, I did an article where I said that whenever I looked at that, or I looked at those two threads and I looked at the comments beneath the threads, and the common theme in those comments was pedophilia, big jock knew, all of that, pay the people what they're owed. And I kind of just came to the conclusion that, you know, whatever happens, if this falls flat in its face, which it could, because it's still in the offing, like, they could just turn around and we'll say, look, we told you so. We told you this is what was going to happen. And the answer would be big jock new. Because that's the temperament.
That's been the answer the last five or six times that we've made predictions that have turned out to be 100% on the money.
Yeah,
about that's you're the making only this coherence. You're making that mistake. That'll be a disaster. Don't do that. And it's been the answer every time.
Yeah.
I mean, the piece I wrote last week about whose record would you stand? Whose record would you want to run on?
Yeah.
We've got the record. We've established ourselves as being, we've told more of the truth and we've made better predictions about the state that club is in over there than just about anybody else. Their own fan media has been absolutely catastrophically bad at reading the runes. The Scottish media either doesn't know how or doesn't care to do it. You know, it's a curious, weird Scottish football fact that had they listened to us, we'd have been the best friends they ever had.
Yeah.
And when people like have on occasion asked me, are you not worried that one day they're going to listen to us? I'm like, no, of course I'm not. We're the last people they're ever going to listen to. Of course they're not going to listen to us, Christ's sake. In fact, I sometimes think that it was our exposés about White and our exposés about Green and our basically saying, how can you trust a glib and shameless liar? And, you know, Ashley's no coming in today in it in Ibrox that he hasn't already done at Newcastle. I sometimes think it was our warnings that actually entrenched them in their positions where we're just going to defend these guys way beyond the point where that was normal or sensible. Yeah. I mean, I remember the unanimous hilarity in Celtic cyberspace when Charles Green released his Christmas video. I mean, my God, right? There isn't a single one of us who wasn't in absolute stitches watching that. Absolute car crash. And saying, this is who runs their club. It's like watching Donald Trump. It's like, Jesus Christ. Are these people out of their minds? What are they doing? This is who runs their club now. And they loved it. And I don't know if part of them loving it was because we laughed at it and we mocked it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, how many warnings did he need? How many times do we need to tell them stuff? And, I mean, the weird thing about it is, as you said, right, all the comments were all focused on just hatred and pouring out bile, right? When I posted the article the following day, I got a bunch of comments on it for them, right? And not a single one of them addressed a single point in the article. Not one of them. They couldn't refute a single claim in it. So I reposted the article and basically dared them. Any of you want to come and say that? There's a single fact in here that's right. Come on, because that's all we've done, is we've told them the facts.
Yep.
And we pointed out, well, we only poking holes in anything. We're pointing at the holes that already exist. And I don't know whether you intend to discuss this in a separate segment, right? But the Guardian today has published an article that's pointed out there are even more holes in it than even we thought there were. So, I mean, the whole thing is, to me, it's nuts. Again, if we're in pain, I don't know what it is we're in pain about. Sick of winning, maybe. But no, I can dissuade them of that fact right now. We're certainly not sick of winning. We are worried about something. Only that if this goes the way I think it's going to go, that I might laugh myself into a hospital bed. I'm worried about that. That's a very genuine worry. Yeah. Other than that, I don't know what they think. See, I don't know what picture they have in their heads of what will happen here. The club's position is such that even if these guys were minded to come in and throw £100 million at this problem, FSR regulations would not let them do it. And that's just a fact. And that's an unchangeable, unbendable, unbreakable fact. And that alone renders 95% of the rubbish that I've read on their forums utterly redundant. And I'm sorry to point that out, but it is a fact. And I'm sorry that they don't like it and they don't want to hear it. But it is a fact nonetheless. What can you say? If they're impervious to facts, then they are impervious to logic and reason and anything else you tell them. And the next car crash is just around the corner. Of course it is. You can see it a mile away. You can see a mile away how all the ways in which this is going to fail spectacularly. Yeah, even if it happens, which it's still not 100% certain.
I did an article earlier on today, and I had to say or state in that article that a lot of my readers have been accusing me of saying one minute it's a fake over and the next minute it's a takeover. So I had to break it down for them and say, well, you know, fake over equals sugar daddy coming in, spending millions and lending Mbappe. Takeover is the American consortium trying to acquire 51%. And that is what's going on at the moment. But the fake over is just what the pie in the sky, the La La Land crap, the moon howling that they're thinking that's going to happen. So, Joe, take over, fake over, which is
it? I've said from the start that some version of this will happen. Some version of this will happen. There's someone out there that's going to buy King shares and probably the shares of someone else. But this idea that it's going to be this transformational, once in a generation, Rangers are back, it's, for the birds, it's mad. It makes no sense. None of that is going to happen. None of that is going to happen.
Let Joe come in. He'll tell us exactly what's going to happen. What's your take, Joe?
James, relax. Chill out. There's nothing happening. Absolutely nothing. Nothing's happening. It's a lovely deflection broken by the award-winning Keith Jackson. On the 19th of February, there is nothing happening. A bad man in South Africa has found a dubious businessman in America that might buy his shares. And they've managed to wrap up other things. And again, still no mention of Douglas Park. There is absolutely nothing happening in this. It's a great deflection. They get all excited and go into it and all sorts of details. Here's some facts on it. On the 20th of February, it was Leeds United were coming in, and then the 21st of February, it was Andrew Kavanagh. So within 3 days, the Daily Record had reeled back. They lost at home to Motherwell, and 2 days later, Sky Sports News informed everyone that agreement in principle had been reached to buy 51% of the shares and due diligence was underway. Then last week, a week after getting knocked out of Europe by Athletic Bilbao, they're having a Q&A session, and curiously at the same time...
Glad you mentioned that, mate. Yep.
A statement gets released to Sky Sports News, and that had two significant words, and I'll not repeat them because it's comical, but positive conversations, wow. I'm having conversations with Dermot Desmond about a Celtic buyout, but actually it doesn't really mean anything. So there is nothing happening in this. I think it's now been acknowledged that, as unlike the Sky Sports News report, that the agreement in principle for 51% of the shares, they're having discussions with significant shareholders, and I have no idea how a consortium with less than 50% of the shares manages to force through a share issue where they buy up the
shares,
and then that gives them control. Consortium for any bears looking in means it's a couple of people, it's not one sugar daddy. A consortium maybe means three or four people. There was, I think, 49ers Enterprises and Andrew mentioned in the statement last week. If these guys off the radar, they'd be buying the club themselves. They wouldn't be clubbing together. It's nice. It sounds great that there's all these different things. They're going to be making an impact in America with marketing. Red Bull are going to be sponsoring the shirts, all these next year. But James, there is nothing to it, nothing whatsoever. Many of us acknowledge, and quite a number of people in the Celtic boardroom, mainly the Celtic chairman, whenever the going gets good at Celtic, yeah, he slams the brakes on and switches into reverse gear. That is all that we are worried about. The circus, the nonsense from Ibrox. Let them run with it. Let them get excited. Discuss it to death in their podcasts. Go into 200,000 pages on their forums. What is it? I think there's no tours taking place at Ibrox tomorrow, which obviously means that the 49ers are over having a tour of the stadium, etc., etc. So I think there's... There's three more weekends left in the SPFL season. You just need to keep it ticking over until then. And then once the final game's over, I think they're away to Hibs at Easter Road. I can just quietly be put to bed and left to rest. But nothing's happening. Sit back and enjoy the amusement. And hopefully any of them are clipping this, throw it back my direction. When Keith Jackson breaks a world exclusive for you, you completely dismiss it or laugh at it. They've lapped it up and they've been running with it for more than 2 months. So that's more my tuppence worth from me, Eric. You can seize control again.
So in the papers today, it's mooted that Red Bull are going to be the new sponsor on the Umbro jerseys for next season. A source and a report is what said that. And that, again, to me, is just clinging on the whole Leeds United thing, that Leeds United have Red Bull as their sponsor. So consequently, then Rangers should have it as their sponsor. So they'd be Red Bull Rangers, I guess, going forward. But that aside, at the moment, we have two front runners in the managerial race for the position at Ibrox. One being Stevie G and the other being Marco Rose. I wrote a fairly extensive article today on Stevie G, and I kind of stated that if the consortium are going to take over the club, they clearly have zero ambition if Stevie G is their prime candidate for the role, because the guy's a serial failure. His CV is stacked with failure since he left Ibrox. And to bring him back, the only reason they'd be bringing him back is because he's popular with the fans and he's top 10 in a row. But his managerial pedigree, there is just no comparison between him and Brendan Rodgers. And Brendan Rodgers, without doubt, would own him. if he came back. So, I mean, me personally, I would welcome it. I'd welcome Steven Gerrard coming back. I would be absolutely over the moon if he came back to Ibrox. Marco Rose, different story. And I said in the article that I wrote, I said that I felt Brendan Rodgers himself would prefer to have a manager of the caliber of Marco Rose come to Ibrox because he's a guy, he is a guy who likes the challenge. And at the moment, he doesn't have a challenge. He's in a non-competitive league. And he's winning serially in a non-competitive league. So for him to be stimulated and to keep his interest in the job at Celtic going, I'm sure he wants a better challenge. So the thoughts of Steven Gerrard coming into him, he's kind of scratching his head and saying, well, that's not going to be much of a challenge for me. So what's your take on it, James? What do you think is going to happen?
Well, if 49ers Enterprises are going to have a say in what happens at Ibrox. And by the way, there is a major complication there, which no one in the media wants to look at. And again, it's going to be down to us to talk about it, but I'll get that in a minute. If they're going to have a major say, then you may want to look at what they're doing at Leeds right now, because there's a great story that broke there today in The Guardian, and which some of their fan sites are awfully excited about, because they think that David Fark is heading to Ibrox because Marath is heading over there to talk to him about maybe not being the manager at Leeds next season. Just pause for a second on that and think about how that conversation is going to go, by the way. Hi, David. I know I promised you this job for the long term, but listen, we don't want to give you it because we don't think you're good enough for the English Premier League. So here's what we propose. Why don't you just go and manage Rangers instead? And that stony silence is exactly the response that they're going to get if they try that. Exactly the response. So I think that one's fucking dead in the water. I don't think there's any probability of that happening. But The Guardian doesn't actually say that he's going to be sacked. They say that Manath is going over there to talk to him because he supports him and he's backing him and he wants to go over there and get his plan and get his blueprint and take it back to San Francisco and sell it to the rest of the board. Because this is what the papers have not said about the 49ers group. They talk about the 49ers group as if it's this unified whole that's owned by the York family and that they run everything. But as The Guardian pointed out today, 49ers group is a consortium of more than 100 different investors. And those investors are arguing with each other over David Fark and whether he should be the next guy to manage them in the Premier League. And Marath, who's supposed to be the guy with all the power, now has to go over to Leeds and talk to him and come back and convince them why he should be the manager. Over 100 different groups, all bickering with each other. Right, so this is complicated enough on its own, right? If that's the future of Ibrox, the 49ers are going to be major shareholders and major players. But who's the major player at 49ers group? Who makes the decisions there? Who runs the show there, right? And if you can get past that little complicated exercise, think about this. If they and Kavanagh have a fallen out about strategy and about the plan, which one of them makes the final decision? Who gets the final say? Or maybe that final say will be left up to the chairman who's already at the club, who they say will be staying there, or the chief executive who's already at the club, who they say will be staying there. Or maybe it'll be the new director of football who's already at the club, who they say will be staying there. All it's part of the big transformation, of course, right? So it's already looks like a shit show in the making, right? But that's not even the best thing about the article. That's not even the thing that I loved the most about the piece. That the 49ers group are all bickering with each other about whether he should be the manager. He's away here to convince them. They're already talking to three other candidates. And one of those candidates is Giovanni van Bronckhorst, who the Ibrox club's already sacked. Now, this is the caliber of manager they're talking about for Leeds United in the Premier League. Which makes you wonder how anybody can sustain Marco Rose fantasies at this point. Or delusions about Mourinho. Or, I mean, Bill Leckie the other day, on the back of some modest possibility that Red Bull might take a wee fraction of the shot for sponsorship, is touting Jurgen Klopp. I mean, these people are wired to the moon. Look at the candidates they're talking to for Premier League bound Leeds United. Giovanni Van Bronckhorst is one of them. The other one's Carlo Ancelotti's son. Come on. Come on. If that's the standard Leeds are going to get, what do you think the standard they're going to get is like? It's not going to be the earth-shattering appointment they think it is. They're mad, right? And again, that's not even the best part of the article. Their managerial candidates list is made up of three guys who are out of work or going to be out of work soon, right? And the reason for that is that they're moving to a data-driven scouting and signing system, right? Forget about a scouting department. It's all going to be about wee numbers on a computer screen. The same system, by the way, that Hearts brought in at the start of the season and just sacked their manager for implementing. You tell me this is going to work out the way they think it is. None of this is going to work out the way they think it is. And the people who are saying, but they'll increase the club's profitability and all that, guess again, because Leeds is in a shit state. Leeds has got financial sustainability regulations, right? Which mean they can only make losses of £60 million over a three-year period. Guess what? The losses are £94 million over a two-year period. And so they've got to comply with that in the Premier League next season. So if you want to know what the Ibrox takeover might look like if it goes through, have a look at Leeds. There's your shining example of quality leadership. They can't agree on the manager. They can't agree on what his future should be, but they agree that Giovanni Van Bronckhorst and Carlo Ancelotti's son are viable candidates for taking the job next. They're in debt. They can't possibly spend the kind of money that will keep them in the Premier League. And this data-driven signing policy is the future of the club, which no high-caliber manager is going to come in and work under. There's your future, guys. There it is. And that's your best-case scenario.
Yeah.
They're barmy. They're absolutely barmy. Yep.
Joe, Daniel Farke, Stevie G, or Marco Rose, or nobody. Barry Ferguson. Which is it?
David Martindale or Derek McInnes. That's who you're looking at. Or more likely.
That's much Barry more likely. Barry much Ferguson more likely.
100%. Aye. Marco Rose or whatever, I mean, never in a million years would they even entertain it. No matter how bad his career was going, he wouldn't be there. So relax over that one as well, James. So that's as likely to happen as the 49ers. There's no credible manager will go anywhere near that club. Look at the nonsense you're going to inherit in the playing squad. You've got no transfer budget and you're up against a pretty decent manager across the road.
And to talk no time off, to settle in and build your own thing either, by the way. Success needs to happen right away or you're going to be sacked. Mad.
Sorry, you faded out there, Joe.
The Scottish media have whipped them up into expecting a revolution win in the first couple of matches. Your first couple of matches are Champions League for a true bear only. So it's Barry Ferguson, David Martindale, or Derek McInnes. And it'd be nice if they put all three in and kept a place for Dodsey and Neil McCann and Griegsy. But it's just so much nonsense. Good luck to them. Gives them something to hang on to. Again, they can make Marco Rose this, Marco Rose that, Stevie G. Oh no, he's going to bring back Mickey Beale. All this garbage. So it's not happening. Well. It allows him to, it distracts him away from Celtic winning 55 titles. Celtic are a game against a team that they beat 6-0 at Hampden earlier this season away from winning a ninth treble. But it's far more comforting to talk about and debate Marco Rose and Steven Gerrard. So, again, nonsense. Watch out. If you want to put a bet on, stick it on David Martindale or Derek McInnes.
Fair enough.
I think that's a much more realistic scenario. I've got to say.
We move along to Keith Jackson's article today. I read it and I detect an awful lot of pain and angst and misery pouring off it, because Keith's already conceded title 56.
He has.
55 is in the bag. He's already conceded title 56 because he doesn't see any hope of us stopping them. He tried to paint somewhat of a positive picture, or even if you could call it that, about the new director. What's his name? The sporting director, is it at Ibrox?
Kevin Thirlwell.
Kevin Thirlwell,
CV speaks volumes. It does speak volumes. You think?
Yeah. He tried to paint a bit of a positive picture of him, but then kind of went into the whole rebuild that he's going to have to do. But as Joe alluded to earlier on, there isn't going to be a rebuild because they don't have the money to do a rebuild, and they're probably going to have to hold on to an awful lot of the playing staff that they have already. So what did you make of his article this morning, Joe? What was your feeling on it? He's hurting a lot, and he definitely, I mean, when he's conceded title number 56 to us already, I think he's just throwing the towel in, isn't he?
First up, a bit of recognition. Last week, Reach PLC were having their annual awards, and Keith and the lads at the Daily Record Hotline Live, they picked up an award. So well done, Keith. He's been able to transfer his skills from old-fashioned typing, print, circulation, newspapers. He's transferred that into the digital age. So the record hotline team, they beat off competition from the Star, the Express, the Sunday Mirror, the People, Rutherglen Reformer, East Kilbride News, Hamilton Advertiser, and dozens more. And Keith, you're the star man. You're the star of the show. But unfortunately for Keith, he never got down to the glitzy awards show. Daniel Caw or something, some wee guy. I think it might be a Celtic sport in the background. He likes to noise Keith up a few times. But he was down collecting the award, which looked like a sheet of paper, and that was delivered by Carol Vorderman. So Keith missed out on never got his picture with Carol Vorderman. So well done, Keith. Keep up the good work. Excellence in print and also excellence in the digital age of the podcast. So Keith is hurting. It's weekend 55. Celtic have won 55 titles. Never in a million years under the glory days of Sir David Murray did Keith ever envisage that he'd be reporting in Celtic winning 55 titles. So it's grim, despairing times. The Daily Record has gone in the same direction as his old football club, Rangers. He doesn't get any phone calls any longer from Sir David, and his absolute terror and fear is all over that opinion piece this morning. So there's not much more to say about it. It's fantastic stuff. Keep up the good work, Keith. We all love it. Us three guys would be lost without you. And hopefully there's a long-term contract at the Daily Record for Keith to lead the record into the digital age, daily podcasts and all the rest of it. You're the man, Keith. Keep it up. Right, James, follow on. Follow.
That's a hard act to follow there, James.
Oh, dear God. Oh, wow. Well, when Jackson writes one of his lunatic pieces, I always critique it with a full line-by-line breakdown, right? But I always make a point never to be overly critical of Keith when he's right, and this time he's right. Because as I've got an article going up about this in the Guardian piece at 6:30, and the bottom line is that Jackson is capable of writing the kind of stuff that people would read when he writes from his gut rather than trying to use his brain, which I don't recommend he tries too hard today. But when he writes from his gut, he's got a habit of getting it on the nose, because he's done this a few times when it's come to the Ibrox club in the last few years. He can spot a failing manager, he can spot a failing player, he can spot a failing regime. And as I say, it's about switching off his brain and letting his gut do the talking when he sits down and types. And that's how it read this morning. This is a guy who has stopped trying to convince himself that the 49er fantasy is going to deliver any kind of results. And his analysis was pretty on the nose. And then, but it's nothing that we have now already, all three of us, have now already said in our articles in the past couple of months. For a start, this takeover has taken far too long to do any good for next season. And he's right about that. They've left themselves far too much today in too short a time. He's also correct about that. Last week, in his article, which I thought was about as brazenly batshit as anything that he's wrote, he did have one solid point where he talked about how, if it's no Barry Ferguson, he's worried that the club will pick some kind of artificial intelligence-led, data-led manager. And The Guardian has only confirmed today that that's exactly what they will do. So his concerns are valid. They're justified. And when he analyses the situation as clearly as he has this morning and says that he basically thinks that there is far too much today in too short a time of day and that he doesn't see Celtic materially weakening, I can't argue with a single word of it. He's right. He's got it for a change. Keith Jackson is on the money. What can I say? It's all fact. There's nothing in there that I would argue with. I don't want to sound overconfident, but right now I genuinely cannot see past us for next season's title, because we always talk about how two things have to happen here before the balance of power in Scottish football shifts in any significant way. And that's that they have to massively improve and we have to go backwards at the same time. Because we're heading for another 90 points campaign here. And anybody who comes in over there has got to win 30 games minimum just to keep up, just to stay in the race. And that's a problem that is really insurmountable as long as Celtic can maintain its standards and maintain its level of consistency. That's the situation that won't change no matter what else does. They have to win a minimum of 30 games in a 38-game campaign. And he's right, there's no prospect whatsoever of that team being in a good enough place by the time the season starts to do that. It's ours to lose. He's correct for once.
Yeah, well, I mean, the impression I got today when I read the article is that when you're in pain, the truth comes out and the truth hurts, but that's what's coming out in his article.
Doesn't matter how you get there, as long as you get there.
Yeah, I couldn't really... when I read it at first, I was kind of, do I want to critique this? And then I kind of said to myself, there's not much that I can actually critique in it. It's on the money. So, yeah, it's ominous for them. I don't see how... And I did an article yesterday where I said that 55, it buried that ridiculous number. It put that whole bullshit to bed. But unfortunately, whatever way you want to look at it, for them, 56 is the number that really does matter the most, because 56 is the one where not only do we push ahead of them in terms of titles won, we're already undisputedly the most successful club in Scotland next season. We will pull ahead of them on title 56. We'll have won more titles than them. And I think that's what's dawning on Keith Jackson. He realises that we're not going to stop it. Chris Boyd was in the media today saying that he never in a million years believed that we would ever win 55 titles, that we would ever go ahead of them in trophies.
One. I'm going to take that tomorrow because that was mad. Yeah. That was a mad claim to make.
Yeah, yet here we are. So I think the guys in the media are getting, especially Keith Jackson, are getting somewhat, they're becoming realists in that they realize. And I made a point of saying that, and it goes back to what you were saying, James. It's very much a case of, like, even if they start to get it together, they seem to discount the fact that every season upon season, Celtic grows and grows and grows. Celtic earns more, turns over more, and achieves more in terms of, look, okay, that hasn't happened up until recently, but we achieved more this season in terms of what we did in Europe. The idea is that we'll do the same again next season. We'll achieve more. We'll push further into Europe if we can. And when you see the likes of Bodo Glimt and what they're doing, a club the size of Bodo Glimt and how small they are, and they're in a European semi-final, and based on the way they've played this season, could very well make the Europa League final.
Yeah.
There's no reason that we couldn't aspire to be finalists in Europe's top second-tier competition. You know, but the Champions League is where we should be. You know, it's where we should be. But, you know, when you look at Bodo Glimt, it makes you wonder why we aren't doing better. So we should be doing better. But yeah, I mean, the fact of the matter is, it's ominous for them. I'm never going to say a title is in the bag, but I would say I'm pretty optimistic yeah. about 56. And that once 56 is over the line, all the myths are put to bed. Everything. There's nothing left.
I always found that amusing when they talked about how the focus had to be stopping 10 in a row. And I always thought, is that the only number that matters? Because if we had won 10 in a row, we wouldn't have stopped at 10. 11, 12, 13, 14, we're all followed on as a matter of course. But even in the case, well, they did stop 10. That wasn't the only number that mattered. We had 117 trophies in our sights, and then 118, then 119, then 120. We had 55 titles in our sights, and then 56, 57, and 58. And it doesn't stop just when we, you know what I mean? Their nightmare was, oh, they might overtake us in the trophy count by getting to 118. Well, yeah, 118, and we're about to make it 119, then 120. And there's no end in sight. We could just keep going and on and adding to this and extending the gap. And that's exactly what I expect us to do. I mean, there are only two takeovers that have mattered in Scottish football in the last 30 years. And one was Fergus's takeover, because that set us on the path towards eclipsing every one of their records, including the ones that they've lied about. And the takeover when we did it in December. They're the only two takeovers that have mattered in Scottish football in the last 30 years. They're the only two that will matter in the next 30.
Yeah.
Once we're past that number, we're just going to keep extending the lead. It's not going to end just because we've done it. We're not just going to stop just because we've reached a certain milestone. There's like more milestones in front of us. 5 ahead, 10 ahead, 20 ahead. And every one of them we're going to win for its own sake, for what it means for us. Not for what it means to the record books, or not for what it means to them. The ancillary benefit of just doing it over and over again is that they're going to suffer many more pain as a consequence. But that's the additional benefit. We're doing this for us. Yeah. That's the only record that matters.
100%. So we're going a small bit over time there, guys. We'll wrap up the show with our predictions for next Sunday at Ibrox. How do you feel it's going to go at Ibrox, Joe, on Sunday?
I'll wait to 10 minutes in before giving any verdict, because the last two games have been horrific. So anything you're saying just now is fairly meaningless. Nobody could have predicted what happened in the last two games. So hopefully we sit back, we don't push forward, just sit back, play a ball once. If we go forward and try and suffocate them, that's exactly the game that they want. So surely Brendan Rodgers has learned. It might go against his principles to sit back and just hold on to possession, tempt them forward and hit them hard as we did against Dundee United. So I will wait for 10 minutes in, but if Brendan Rodgers is the elite manager that we all believe, I don't believe he's an elite manager, he's a very good manager, but he's surely learned from those two games. He's watched their recent matches, and everyone, they've lost five and drawn one of the last six games at Ibrox. Surely we can go and add another notch to Barry's bedpost. So I'll wait until 10 minutes into the game, and then I'll give any verdict then. So it's a dangerous business. I'll pass over to James for his verdict.
Well, first I need to decide how much I care. I thought Cameron Carter-Vickers was absolutely spot on at the weekend when he said that somebody made the crazy suggestion that we're going there with something to prove. And he said, what do we need to prove? We won the league. We're champions. The league table. Have a look at that. That's where we are. And he's right. And I mean, okay, it would be nice to go there and win and shut wee Barry up. But wee Barry's career highlights he's already got his great career memories. And we can't take them away from him. He has them. They're his own. He can go to bed every night dreaming on those. But he'll wake up every morning realising that none of it was enough. That beating Celtic hasn't he got him the job that he craved, and hasn't he gave him the recognition that he wanted? And I did say that when it happened at Celtic Park, that this is your career highlight, mate. This is as good as it's going to get for you, and I'll never get this good again. I expect us to win, but then I expected us to win the last tour. The one thing that I haven't heard is Brendan making big predictions and all talk about how, you know, oh, we've learned what went wrong and all that. I should hope he's learned what went wrong, and I would hope he doesn't feel the need to say it this time. If we start well, we will win comfortably. But like you said, Joe, we're not going to know that till the game starts. We're not going to know it 10 minutes in. Am I confident? God, yes. Hell, yes. Why shouldn't I be? Am I very confident? God, yes. Hell, yes. Why shouldn't I be? But I know exactly how they're going to line up. I have a feeling they know exactly how we're going to line up. And you never know. You just never know.
And you're going to put a number on it?
We've either learned or we haven't. We've either... The mentality is either going to be right on the day or it's not. And I think more than anything else, the mentality is what has to be right. But the thing is, I have a sneaking feeling that there are a lot of people in our squad who have to decide how much they care. And that's the thing. Because there is a sort of mentality within the Celtic squad now that this is all about us, and it's all about what we do, and it's all about the standards that we set for ourselves. And that is both positive and a negative in terms of these games. Because what these guys are actually saying is that we treat this as just another game. We treat this as, there's nothing special about playing this lot. It's just another fixture. And if they can get their heads right and get in the right headspace, then they'll win easily. But if they're going to treat this as just another fixture when the opposition is going to go hell for leather to try and win it at all costs, then we may get caught by surprise.
Would you be willing to put a number on it?
Eh?
Put a number on it? As in, what do you reckon the score will be?
We turn up and we play well, 2 or 3. In fact, 3 or 4, easily. That would be easy if we turn up.
Yeah. Well, look, I think there's going to be two key factors in this game, right? I think factor number one is, I think Barry's already crossed the line from bonkers into batshit.
Yeah.
With the players. So
he also realizes now, I think he's not going to get the job, and there's nothing that he can do.
Exactly. So I think that I said to you guys in the last fixture when we played them at Celtic Park that it was going to be a whole frothing at the moment occasion for Barry Ferguson. He was going to lose his shit inside in the dressing room. He was going to have them all riled up and mental and ready to go and ready to go at Celtic. And that's exactly how it seemed to transpire, right? This time around, I just don't think that the players are going to take him seriously. He'll be frothing at the mouth. He'll be all riled up. He'll be the usual, you know, go out there and win it for, you know, show them what we're made of, all this kind of crap. But they just won't take it seriously. And they won't take him seriously. Don't get me wrong, they'll want to win the game. They're professionals. Every professional footballer wants to win a game. But I just don't think that they're going to take Barry's instructions seriously.
No.
And I think that's going to be their undoing. In addition to the fact that I really think in the run-up to the game, Brendan Rodgers will have shown his players videos, not of the losses to them, but of the haphazard management that Barry has displayed in all of the games that they have not been involved in, that they have not been involved in. The likes of the games even that he won, the Kilmarnock game, the Dundee game, and then all the games that he lost at Ibrox. And all he has to do is show the players examples of how to get at them and how to contain them in those games. And I think that's the way he needs to approach it. It's very easy to beat them on their own patch. That's been proven time and time again by other clubs this season. Obviously, they're going to up their game against us. So, as Joe said, all we have to do is sit back and absorb it for the first 10, 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Let them come at us. Let them see what they can do. And then we start to play our game.
We have to be conscious of what you just said there as well, right? About how many teams have went and beat them there. That's not a comfortable stadium for them when they're not playing well.
Yeah.
That ground creates a toxic atmosphere when they're not playing well. And we need to take advantage of that from the first minute to the last.
Exactly. So, I mean, if I was going to put a number on it, I'm going to call 3-1. I do think they'll score a goal. I don't know whether it'll be first and we'll then just come out and score ours. But I think 3-1 is the scoreline that we're going to see in that game. I expect Adamaida to score. And you know Dyson Maeda is always good for a goal at that venue when he's on form.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously the loss of Felipe Jota is not great, but I think we'll manage nonetheless to...
I think that actually helps us.
Yeah, and I think we'll manage to boss the game.
It makes the starting 11 decision really easy for the manager. And he plays Maeda wide left and he plays Ida in the middle. And I would have had Ida start this game no matter what the situation was. Yeah. Anyway,
he will pull their defence all over the place. He will. That's my call on it. I say 3-1. I would say the scores will be Ida, Maeda and possibly Kuhn. I'm just going to say the front three are going to score. That's my prediction. I'm never too far wrong with my predictions, except for that hat trick that I wanted from Dyson Maeda. They probably shot the shit out of me next Sunday and get a hat trick now. just to prove me wrong.
That's a fact.
Yeah, it would for sure. But look, we've gone slightly over time, lads. We'll wrap it up until next Monday, because obviously after the Monday will be after the game. So we'll have our podcast again on Monday. Thanks again for all your contributions as usual. Thank you, Joe, and thank you, James. To our followers and our viewers, please continue to like, subscribe, and hit the thumbs up. And if you like what we do, we'll keep on growing it, and we're going to get bigger and better as time goes by. This is only the beginning for the Trinity Tims. We're coming up to the end of our first season. Expect much bigger and better things next season. So for this week anyway, folks, it's goodbye from us, and enjoy your week ahead, and we're all looking forward to the game on Sunday. Good luck, and have a good one.
Hail, hail, guys.